Accession number 26842, Reel 2.
Dr. Hargreaves, Reel 2. Now, we were talking about your time as the surgeon, the doctor on HMS Redmill, dealing with six of the ships from 42 Escort Group. Now, when there was a major case, you used to get the wardroom ready for surgery. How would you get the wardroom ready for surgery?
Well, you disinfect it all together. And, of course, you'd wear it.
Now, what would you use for disinfectant? Because you wouldn't use any...
Dettol.
Dettol?
Yeah.
And that would be, would that be most surfaces or just the table?
Yeah, all the surfaces.
And what are the preparations?
Well, you'd also use Dettol on the operating table. You convert the dining room table into an operating table.
How? I mean...
Well, it was so prepared that it was easy to do. The table was so designed, you know, that it could easily be... But I did a small amputation in the sick bay. You know. I used open ether, I used anaesthetic, you know, and I amputated an index finger in the sick bay. You know. It's only a big operation you do on in the...
Now, when you say you converted it to a surgical, I'm not quite clear what you mean. Surely, was it not just a flat ball?
Well, no, it's not just a flat ball. There's a part that can be raised up.
On the neck?
Yeah.
Raise the head?
Yeah.
Now, tell me, would you have many occasions to carry out major surgery?
Well, I didn't have, you know, but I could have had. So I mean, it was important for somebody to be there that was capable of doing it, you know. And I had experience of it.
So you didn't have to actually do this to prepare?
I didn't, no.
Now, what do you remember? Tell me some of the main incidents you remember from your time on the Redmill. I mean, do you recall any particular incidents?
Well, when we were torpedoed in particular.
Well, can you tell us that whole... Do you know the date that happened?
No, I don't know the date.
They can look that up, but... Can you tell the whole story as you saw it? Where were you in the
time? I was in the sick bay. I was giving an injection. I forget what it was for, you know, when we were hit. You know. And we were hit near the sick bay. You know. But as we were hit so near, I couldn't tell whether the explosion was astern or forward from where I was. You know. And I went forward. You know. Although it was astern that we were hit. I went astern later.
You went forward because you thought it was forward?
Yes. I thought we might have been mined, you know, which would have probably been forward. You know. But if it was a torpedo, it would have probably been astern.
Now, what's happening when you came out of the sick bay and went forward?
Well, I went on deck and I asked a man if he'd seen any casualties. You know. I didn't realise the casualties were at the stern. Well, he said he was keeping a lookout for Stoker Trimby, I think it was. And that was the stoker who had his clothes blown up and he was swimming.
He'd been blown overboard, all
right? Yeah, been blown.
Now, what effect had the torpedo strike had when you went back to stern then, I presume, did you?
Yes.
So what effect had the torpedo had?
Well, it had killed 26 men, and it had fractured the ship across, you know, there was a transverse fracture. The stern could have broken off, you know, and one man was trapped in the broken wreckage, you know. His brain was exposed, you know, but he must have been internally injured, you know, because he couldn't be trapped like that without the metal that was trapping him. Causing internal injury.
Can you describe it? I mean, is it how was he trapped? Sorry.
By coiled metal that was wrapped around him. And a wave washed over him every so often. And he was semi-conscious.
And what could you do for him?
Well, I ordered the sick man to give him a large dose of morphine, because I was afraid he might recover consciousness to know he was in a hopeless position. And he died of wounds. He didn't die of the morphine, in my opinion. The morphine kept him unconscious until he died of wounds.
So, and you didn't give the injection, the sick bay attendant.
Yes.
But you ordered it. I just want to make this clear, because this story has been spread about more. Your intent was to keep him unconscious so he would not see the predicament he was in and panic when in circumstances where he couldn't do anything about it.
Yes.
Was there any way of getting him out of the wreckage, in your view, without killing him?
No, there wasn't, in my opinion.
So the way he was trapped,
in
getting the metal off, you'd kill him anyway.
Yes.
And your view was that he'd already suffered fatal or near-fatal internal...
I considered it was fatal, the injuries he'd suffered.
So you were just basically trying to ease his distress if he wake up. But he was unconscious.
Yes, semi-conscious he was.
And after the morphine, he was unconscious?
Yes.
And how long did it take, the whole process, from before he died, basically?
Well, I think it was about 2 hours before he died.
And he was unconscious for most of that time after the morphine?
He was unconscious after the morphine.
No attempt was made to get him out?
No.
No. And so had the back of the ship fallen off, or was it still just about...
It was still attached.
But only just?
Yeah. Well, some of it had disappeared, Well, my gun was up in the air. About a third of the ship was missing. Well, there was another man unconscious. He was the oldest member of the crew. Roe, his name was. He was 47, and he was the oldest member. He was unconscious, and unfortunately he died. I put him on the operating table and put a drip up on him. He died.
Just from, again, internal injuries, was it? Or did
yes, you... internal injuries and concussion.
And anything
there else? Was nothing could be done for him.
And anything else? Any other wounded that you were able to treat on? There were 26, there were a lot dead. What about other... Minor wounds.
Minor, yes. Well, one man had a fracture, a compound fracture of his femur. I used the Thomas's splint on him, although it wasn't the right size for him.
But can you explain how you use a Thomas splint on a compound fracture?
Well, it's got a ring at the top to be used on with him. And it's got two metal bars running down each side of the leg, and it circles around the foot. And you put a pull on the leg by elastoplast bandages around the side of the leg, and fastened around the end of the Thomas's splint to put traction on the fracture. And bring it into line more.
And any other wounded or casualties that you had to treat? Were there more minor?
Well, the second lieutenant, had Kendall, his name was. He had a scalp injury, not serious, but we made out it was serious, because we'd been hit by a new type of torpedo. And we were travelling at a safe speed, and there was no torpedo, there was no echo, and no periscope was seen. So we assumed it was a new type of torpedo. Well, this second lieutenant was landed in Southern Ireland. They allowed him to land there as a casualty. I went with him, and he was taken to Northern Ireland then and flown over to Liverpool. To Captain Walker, to make a report on it. But he wasn't a genuine... He wasn't a serious kind of figure.
So he was just used to get news of what was happening back as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And what about the other more minor wounds that you were treating, the abrasions and cuts? Were there many?
Yes, not many, but there were just lacerations that needed stitching. The sick birth attendant could have stitched them up. I stitched them up, but the sick birth attendant could have done so.
And so what happened next? I mean, how long was it? I mean, how did you get back to port? What was the story of that?
Let me see now. We were towed into Londonderry. The ship was towed into Londonderry.
To Londonderry or Pollock Dock?
Londonderry. And there were a lot of submarines that had surrendered, U-boats that had surrendered there when we got there.
This was right at the end of the war?
Yeah, it was 3 days before the end of the war that we were talking about.
So May, 1945.
Yeah.
And what was your reception when you got back? I mean, do you remember getting back into harbour, what happened?
Well, I was placed in Eglinton Barracks, you know. I was an ML there at the barracks, you know, when I got back.
Now, there's just a couple. Are there any more stories? Just tidying up.
Well, a thing that interested me was this man that had the wreckage around him, you know. It struck me that the cross members of a ship could be made stronger, you know, if more angles were put onto them, onto the metal, you know. And if the metal was star-shaped or something, you know, to give it as many angles as possible to make it rigid. You know. I was interested in this condition of the ship after we were torpedoed.
Who did you recommend these things to?
I didn't recommend them to anyone.
It was just you were thinking about it.
Yeah.
Now, looking back at your time on the Red Mill, because you were on about a year...
More than a year,
a year and a half, yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any other stories? I know we've come to the end of it because it was torpedoed and back in hell, but are there any other stories to give an idea what life was like? I mean, you told me one story just now about fishing.
Yeah.
And a practical joke that was played. Can you tell us that story on tape?
Yes. Well, I put a fishing line while we were having tea at anchor. I put a fishing line out over the stern. And when I came out from tea, you know, a sailor said, "I think you've got a bite," he said. And when I pulled it in, there was a tin of salmon attached to it.
Any other examples of shipboard life or humour that you recall? Just anything, really. You know.
Let me see. When we got to Russia, you know, I walked round the Murmansk on my own, and coming back, I met the captain and the first lieutenant, Frankham. I met them at about 10 o'clock at night, going to the motorboat to take us back to the ship. And a sailor came over with a silver coin, at least a Russian came over with a silver coin, and wanted to buy English cigarettes from us. And the first lieutenant said, "Who him?" Pointed to the face on the coin, you know. The Russian said, "Him, Lenin." And this first lieutenant said, "Lenin, no good, him stink," he said.
A bit controversial, fun.
Well, I thought we'd be arrested on the way back to the ship. Another time, I had to go to a ship that was across Kola Bay, you know, to do a minor operation.
Do you know which ship?
No, I don't want. But on the way back, they told me the motorboat had run aground, you know, and they put me in a small rowing boat with two sailors to row me back to my ship. And a storm blew up, and these sailors were making no progress. And I didn't offer to row for fear of, if we moved our position, it might capsize the rowing boat. And a Russian warship, which was called the Archangel, which had been HMS Royal Sovereign, They saw us, you know, and they sent a motorboat over to tow us. And they towed us back to the to our ship.
Any other stories?
I can't think of it.
There was one you told me about another time when you were in a sailing boat.
Yes.
Tell me that story on tape.
Well, for naval officers, it was very cheap to join the dinghy sailing club at Harwich, you know. So I joined it, and I used to take these. I used to sail quite a lot in dinghies, you know. And one day I took a dinghy out in a storm. And I thought the storm would die down, you know, but while I was having tea, the storm blew up, you know, and the first lieutenant said, take the boat away as soon as possible. He said, take in three reefs, you know. But it capsized, you know, and they had to send the lifeboat out to me.
So you actually sank, what, with you in it?
Yeah. Well, it didn't sink, it capsized and filled with water.
So, but it didn't go under, but it just yeah. was on its side. What was that like?
Well, it was all right. Well,
now, any other stories or anything you remember from the time on the Red Mill?
After
what happened next after the Red Mill, then?
After the Red Mill, I was put in charge of a naval sick quarters at Calais, you know, which had been a brothel, a superior brothel. You know, and when I left it, I handed it over to the madame that owned it. You know, and while I was there, a French waiter got a whittler off his thumb, you know. And
what?
A whittler of his thumb, you know. And a whittler of the thumb is loculated, you know. So the pressure there compress on the artery, and it can compress the artery and cause death of the bone, you know. So I gave him a pentothal injection, you know, intravenous anesthesia I gave him. And I put a scalpel right through his thumb, you know. And when he was coming round from the anesthetic, he said something in French, you know. And I said, what does he say? I said to the head waiter. The head waiter said, he says he won't ever touch whiskey again.
Now, what were you doing in charge of that? This is after the war had finished, I presume.
Yes.
What were you doing in charge of naval sick quarters? I mean, what were you...
Just attending to the health of the sick ward, the naval party that was there.
And how long were you doing that for?
A month.
And then what next?
I went to Germany for 6 months.
So what were you in charge of there? Or what were you doing?
Well, there was a Dr. Playfair and I. We were both in charge of this. We were both at the sick bay there in Cuxhaven.
At Cuxhaven, that's the German harbour.
Yeah.
And was this in our naval hospital or just in...
A naval sick quarters, yeah.
What do you remember about your time at Cuxhaven?
Well, one thing that happened there was Playfair, who was a senior to me, you know, he said, if there are cases of VD, he said, we won't report it. You know. He said, we won't report cases of VD. We'll treat it like private GP. Although, according to naval regulations, you have to report it. You know.
Now, why was that?
Why was what?
Why did you do that? Why did he want you to not report it?
Well, he wanted me to treat the patients like private patients, you know.
But why?
I don't know why. But as a result of that, after he left, I got a case of syphilis, you know. An officer had a hard chancre of his penis, you know, which I thought was due to syphilis, you know. And I wanted to get the Germans to do a dark ground illumination with a dark ground microscope to see if the treponema of syphilis was there. But I hadn't got access to penicillin, and I was only able to get it dressed. You know. But I didn't report it, which I regret that I didn't report it now. I should have got him to go home as soon as possible and see his own doctor, you know. Go home on compassionate grounds. You know.
What other sorts of cases were you dealing with in Cuxhaven?
Well, there were VD. There was more than one. There was gonorrhea there.
Much more so, it sounds like, than the problem had been on the Red Mill.
Yes.
And what are the problems with you? Or was that the main problem, Peter?
That was the main problem.
How were you getting on with the Germans? The German civilians or the German...
Well, I got to like the Germans, you know. And I got to believe in friendship between Britain and Germany. And as a result of that, I joined the Anglo-German Association.
You joined it then?
Well, shortly after that, I joined.
Now, why did you believe? Could you just explain a bit about your
feelings about partly that? Because of the Saxon origin of Britain, you know. And in Scotland, you know, the southern Scots are Saxon origin. They're not Celts, the southern. And they're being taken over by the Highlands and Islands, although they're Saxon origin. And if the Scottish language from the Scottish Gaelic took over, it would be a foreign language to the southern Scots. Well, it's partly because of the Saxon origin that I believe in friendship with Germany. But in 1953, I was in a pub in Germany, and I told the people to come to Britain on my holidays to make friendship. And in pubs, I was talking in pubs and so on.
That was a thing you, and that you got from your time in Germany.
Yeah.
Were you aware of the black market at all?
Yes, I was in the black market.
Tell us about that.
But everybody was in it. I did it more openly than most people.
What were you doing?
Well, I was trading mainly cigarettes and coffee for cameras and things like that. Well, everybody was doing it, but most people did it privately. You know. I did it openly. You know. And officers used to come to me for things that they couldn't get, you know, because they knew I could get things often that they couldn't get.
Yeah.
Well, I was in Germany. The German Navy was kept in uniform in Cuxhaven because they could sweep British mines. You know. We could only sweep German mines. We couldn't sweep our own mines.
Why not?
Because they had experience of sweeping British mines. But they had to salute us, you know. Even an admiral would have to salute a sub-lieutenant a while. But I saluted three that were in prison, one of them for scuttling a U-boat. Well, I thought it wasn't a criminal offence. I thought it was through patriotism.
Now, anything else happened in Germany before you were demobilised? Anything else you can remember?
Nothing much.
So, when were you demobilised? Would that be
1946?
1946. And
the last place I was at was Liverpool.
You came back, is that where you were demobilised from, or did you have another posting to Liverpool?
I had a posting to, before I had the posting to Liverpool, I was in Cornwall, in Plymouth. I was in Plymouth demobilising men, examining men medically who were being demobilised.
Tell us about that.
Well, we had to see if they developed any illness while in the Navy.
How fair were you about it? I mean, were you looking for...
Yes, we were looking. And while I was there, in my spare time, I worked for a black doctor. I did medical locum work for a black doctor while I was in the Navy. And one night, at about 3 a.m., there was an urgent call from a nursing home on Dartmoor. And I had this doctor's male secretary with me. I was looking for this nursing home on Dartmoor. And I came into a small village. I got a map out and started arguing about where this place was. Well, the next day, a naval officer said, "I'm boarded out," he said, "at a small village on Dartmoor." He said, 3 o'clock in the morning, there was a noise like thunder, he said. He said, "I heard your voice," he said. "I knew it couldn't be anyone else," he said.
So so you were acting as a locum and you were investigating, looking at the sailors and checking.
Yeah, we were checking to see if they developed anything while in the Navy.
What sort of things were you looking for?
Well, tuberculosis for one thing.
How common was that?
Well, because of naval sailors being close together, you know, it was very important to avoid anyone with tuberculosis joining the Navy. You know. So they all had chest x-rays when they joined. You know. Well, we used to examine them to see if they'd picked up any respiratory illness or any illness like that.
And had they? What proportion had?
Not many.
And what else were you looking for?
Anything they might have developed in the Navy.
I mean, were there things like burst eardrums or things
like that? Yeah, well, yes, we'd examine the eardrums.
And you were fair, were you?
Yeah, we were fair, yeah.
And so you were doing that into 46, in 1946?
Yeah.
And then you came to Liverpool. What were you doing in Liverpool?
I was out of sick quarters there, you know. And when you write to a senior officer in the Navy, you put, may I beg you to do, you put a formality. And I used to send people to the Naval Hospital from the sick quarters there, you know. And I used to say, may I beg you to admit this patient, you know. And the petty officer there said, are we going begging today, he used to say to me.
And that was in 1946 as well?
Yeah.
And anything happened while you were in Liverpool? Anything in particular?
Nothing in particular, no.
So when you demob, tell us about your demob. Anything in particular about that? That was 1946.
Nothing in particular about.
And what was your, how was your post-war career? Because you were a doctor afterwards, weren't you? Affected by your
well, doctor. I did a locum for 6 months. And then I bought a practice that was three quarters private in Wales, you know. But I regret that I did, although it's a lovely place, you know. These private patients, I told them if they went on the National Health, they'd get the same treatment, I told them. Well, when I tried to give them the same, I found out they expected private treatment on the National Health, you know. And I was kept incredibly busy. I had night calls nearly every night. You know. And I had my surgery, I was very popular, you know. My surgery used to be full up, and there used to be a queue of people down the garden, you know. And if I was called out at 9 o'clock at night from the surgery, my sisters would go and tell them, you know. And they used to wait till I came back. They didn't go home, you know. They waited.
So you're very busy. Had your naval experience been any benefit to you as a doctor, do you think?
No, I don't think it had, really.
It done you any harm?
No. But I could have had more experience. I would have liked to have had more medical experience, you know. I would have liked to have been busier as a doctor, you know.
In the Navy?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.